Lots going on in Ottawa today with the Prime Minister and his Chief of Staff being asked tough questions and kind of sort of answering them, but not really. But in all of that, it brought up a lot of questions about employees and employment law and just legal type questions as well. So joining us now, employment lawyer Howard Levitt from Levitt LLP. We also want to get to your employment law questions. So if you have questions that Howard can help you with, specific to COVID-19 and your boss bringing you back or not bringing you back, or you having questions about what you should do if you've been downsized, now is the time to call. Howard will give you his best advice. 855-633-1010. Before we get to your calls, though, Howard, welcome back to the Nightside.
Well, thank you for having me, John.
So today, the Prime Minister was answering questions, kind of, sort of, and anyone watching it outside of being frustrated by the political sparring back and forth, two questions came up for me, and one is something you're going to handle in a National Post column tomorrow, and that is the question of the due diligence process. If all the things the Prime Minister said were true about how we ended up selecting the Wee charity to handle that $900 million, it seems that there might have been a lack of proper due diligence done by the staff. How do you explain due diligence to everyone?
Well, whenever you buy a business, for example, or enter in a project like a billion-dollar project like this, you make sure that the partner you're doing it with is solvent, stable, and capable of doing it. Have they done this kind of project before? They're the best in the business at. Now, the clerk of the Privy Council said we was fundamentally incapable of doing this kind of project, at least they had never done it before. Okay, have they changed their auditors? I don't know about that. Have they changed any members of the board of directors recently? Has anybody resigned? And then you ask consent to speak to them, waive their confidentiality obligations. They say, no, I want you to speak to the people who just resigned. That's the end of the process. So you find out why they resigned. Now, if they found that out, they would have heard from the chair that she didn't resign because of any transition. She resigned because she was prevented from exercising proper corporate governance. That would have been the end of it. You say, what are your bank covenants? Well, we breached our bank covenants. That would have been the end of the due diligence process. It would have been over. The deal would have been squelched. And just down the line, on every single measure, there's a failure, either a fundamental failure to do the most basic due diligence, or they did their due diligence, report to the government, and the government said, well, do it anyway. But if the civil service had failed to do the kind of due diligence I'm talking about, they're really basic. Oh, and how much have they used their monies in the past? What's the financial condition of them? Oh, well, we're in deep financial difficulty. And not only are we in deep financial difficulty, but all of our money's in real estate, which has nothing to do with charities. And we've got short-term mortgages at high interest rates. I mean, on every level, anybody who didn't ask those questions should be fired. Anybody who asked those questions and got those answers and said, go ahead anyway, should be fired. And if the government was told these things and they said, go ahead anyway, they should be fired. And by the way, in law, that would be cause for discharge. If, say, Trudeau was a CEO of a company, Morneau was a CFO. And one last point, John, if I can take your patience for another moment.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the conflict. Everybody's saying he didn't recuse himself. Well, you know what? That's not as important as what he did do. Sure, he should have recused himself. But he voted in favor of it while his family members were financially benefiting from it. That's a direct conflict of interest. And conflict of interest is one of those areas of law, of employment law, like fraud, that's cause for discharge. That's one of disobedience, insubordination, competence. Those are soft, got to really build up a case. But fraud, conflict of interest, which is a form of fraud, are hard causes. And the higher you up the corporate ladder, the more senior the executive, the more likely a conflict of interest will be found by a court to be cause, because senior executives have to be open, honest, transparent, and can't be in a conflict of interest. And if I can leave this summary with just one little story from my own past, I acted for a company some years ago, and I was doing labor negotiations for it. It was going under. and they're about to enter into CCA proceeding, which would have been terribly embarrassing for the owner, obviously. Now, the owner's brother was one of the wealthiest people in Canada, and that brother's biggest suppliers, or one of them, bought my client's business, saved the brother of his biggest client from huge embarrassment, saved his client from huge embarrassment, and he could never have paid off one of the wealthiest people in the country, but what a great, ingenious payoff. Save his brother. So what is we doing? I mean, is Margaret Trudeau worth $320,000? Is she worth $10,000, the better question? But loaded with lots of money, and the PM owes you. Give his brother Alexander, what's he ever done in his life? Give him some money for speaking. What does he have to say that's intelligent or cogent or helpful or learned? Give him some money. The PM owes you. Give Morneau's daughter a job. You can't buy off Morneau. Give his daughter a job. It's the oldest tricks in the books, the direct conflict of interest. They had a duty to say, we have to remove ourselves from any voting because our daughters are working there. My wife speaks there. I spoke there. My mother and brother are paid speakers there. So I can't be involved in the process, and here's the disclosure, and here's the reasons why. And if you don't do that, you get fired for cause if you're CEO or CFO of a company. That's the law.
And Howard is speaking right now, like, and we talked about this earlier, Howard, and people were mad at me because it sounded like we were coming down on Trudeau. And I'm like, but what Howard is saying right now is the law. It's not political. It's the law. Howard, can you quickly touch on the conflict of interest? Because it was discussed today about the difference between family and relatives. Is there actually a difference? Like, for the Prime Minister, is it his wife and his kids are his family? Or does his mom and his brother count?
Of course they do. Of course they do. He has an interest, which is that of his family. It doesn't matter if it's not his household income, it's his family income. His mother's inheritance presumably will go to him and his brothers and maybe his sister at the end of the day. So he actually indirectly benefits financially, but it's not just that. If your kid has a job with a company, they've done a favor for you. If your mother has a job with the company, mm-hmm. they've done a favor for you through your mother. You know, I remember giving a negotiations course at Harvard Law School some years back. And there's an Italian kid in my class, very smart guy, and I made some point, and I can't remember what the point was, but his response about what was, we were talking about conflict, I don't remember the details, but I remember the point he made, which was in our fact scenario, they were doing a favor for somebody's daughter. And he said, you do a favor for my daughter. It's a bigger favor than doing a favor for me. Of course it's a conflict of interest.
That's a good way to put it. Howard Levitt is with us, employment lawyer with Levitt LLP. Howard, I want to start with one that came in on the text. Is my boss allowed to have a security camera on me while I'm at his store as an employee? I know he watches me online from his home internet. Is that legal?
Yes. If he tells you he's doing it, he can do it. Now, there have been cases in the union area where unions have successfully resisted this. You've had to show the union context that there's some real need the employer has, like there's a theft problem, and then they have to use the least intrusive way possible to accomplish their goal. But in the non-union context, sure, there's nothing effectively an employee could do to stop it.
All right, 855.
Not in the washroom or the changing room, but in the office area where they could be seen by a supervisor.
Makes sense. 855-633-1010 if you have questions for Howard Levitt, Canada's top employment lawyer. We start with Andrea. Andrea, what do you got for us tonight?
Hey, Howard. Got a question. I'm a manufacturing company that was declared essential during COVID. Mm-hmm. I lost some of my staff due to lack of daycare in school, so a lot of the mommies went home to be with their kids. Mm-hmm. I had to then beef up my staff with temp workers. Now, do I have any eligibility to get any of the emergency wage subsidy, even though they're not on my payroll number, through my temp agency?
Oh, that's a really good accounting question. Why don't you pay them for your why don't you pay them directly and give the and then give a commission to the temp agency and get around
because
that problem?
The commissions are exorbitant.
Well, I mean, the amount you're paying now over and above what they're paying them, you're paying it anyway. I'm just saying change the form that you're doing it and pay them directly to get the subsidy and pay the difference to the temp agency. You're paying the same, to the point you're paying exactly the same amount you're paying now.
Okay, well, I'll do the math on that.
Or are you suggesting you want to be able to pay...
You pay exactly the same thing you're paying now. You just split how it's paid. You pay a
certain
X dollars...
The per dollar rate is majored by about 45 to 50% of the temp agency.
Well, yeah, so you're trying to get the temp agency's fee paid through the covering. I don't think you're going to get that.
No, you're not going to get that. But if let's assume the temp agency is charging $25 an hour per employee, they're paying them $17 and they're getting $8. Pay the $17 directly to the employee, get the subsidy, and pay the $8 directly to the temp agency instead of $25 directly to the temp agency. That's
you'd still be better off.
Well, yeah, the temp agency is actually a one-time upfront fee, which is really big. But I'll see if I can negotate something with them.
Well, all right, there you go.
If you're getting the same amount, they'll be happy.
There you go. That's an interesting conundrum, Howard. I'd never thought about somebody who maybe lost staff for very valid reasons. They had to take care of their kids or they were sick. And then you have to do something outside of your normal business to get staff in. And the staff is covered, but that extra cost isn't. That's a fascinating problem that probably no one calculated in when they were thinking of these solutions. Let's get Sandra in here. Sandra, welcome to the Nightside. Do you have a question for Howard?
Yes, I do. It's with regards to the CERB. My daughter, high school graduate, was working throughout the whole year. COVID hit. Her hours were reduced. She was off of work for a while, so she collected the CERB. And now she's going back to school come end of August. How does the CERB work at that point? Do they continue collecting if their part-time work is...
It would be a fraud if she did. If she's back
perfect.
To school instead of off, then she's defrauding the government and the taxpayers.
No, because she still works. She works throughout the whole year also. She goes to school full-time, but she also works.
Was she making over $1,000? But what was she making before?
She was making over the $5,000 required by CERB.
Did her income go down because of COVID-19?
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. Hours were down.
School, but once it goes back to school, it has gone down because of COVID-19. That's the question.
Right.
I'm sure she's
That's what I wanted to know. So once she's in school, regardless of COVID, she's not collecting anything, and she'll
whatever
hours they offer her at that point.
If her income will not have gone down because of COVID-19, at the point she's back at university full time, then she's not entitled to CERB, and it would be a fraud to collect it.
Excellent. Perfect.
There you go.
That's what we thought. We just wanted to confirm it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sandra. Hope she has hope your daughter has a good year at school. This is Lisa. Lisa is on mat leave, and she's supposed to go back to work. Lisa, have I got that straight?
Yes, that's correct.
So,
hi, how are you guys?
Good, good.
Okay, so I'm on mat leave, and I'm supposed to go back towards the middle of the month. Now, my work is saying at this time they don't know what's going on because everyone's working from home, and basically there might not be work available for me.
Well, if there isn't work available for you because there's no work, that's one thing, and you'll get CERB. If there's no work available for you because other people are there doing the job you used to do and you were off on mat leave and they don't reinstate you, when other people are doing the work, then that's a violation of the Employment Standards Act and the Human Rights Code. So you have real recourse.
And how long is CERB still? Isn't it just till the end of this month?
You know, I don't remember right now. It got extended recently, and I think sometime, I think it's past the end of this month, but I'm not certain.
Okay. Thank you so much. Okay.
Thank you very much. Which is an interesting question, Howard. If someone was, say, off on sick leave, and they've been off for a year, let's say, and now they come to a company and say, hey, I'm ready to come back in the middle of a pandemic. And the company says, hey, we just don't have a spot for you right now. We'd love for you to come back, but we don't have anything for you to do. Then they go, what would they then go on? Would they go on CERB then?
Well, let me ask the first question. If they're not coming back because business is shut down, then of course they go on. Yes, they go on CERB. If they're not going back because their role has been filled, then they're being discriminated against because of the sick leave, and they have human rights and wrongful dismissal damages.
What if they can't come back because there's no work, but they want to now leave because they figure, well, I'll go find a job somewhere else where there is work? Is that normal severance then?
No, if they quit, then they've resigned voluntarily, and there's no severance at all. But if
sounds
they're
good.
Laid off, if they're laid off when they come back because there's no work, that's a wrongful dismissal, and therefore there's severance.
Makes sense. Let's get Tina.
Do another job too quick if they wanted to sue their employer because then they'd have no damages.
That's right. Here's Tina. Tina, have you got a question for Howard?
Yes. Good evening, gentlemen. Thank you. Very informative. My question tonight is on training. The school bus industry, school bus drivers, especially coming in September, we're going back to school, hopefully. It requires training. If you go and interview to be a school bus driver, they say, we're going to give you the training, we'll give you first aid, we're going to give you the school bus license, but that training is unpaid. Now, is there a loophole that they're able to do that? Because I thought we had to be paid for all training for jobs.
That's certainly my understanding, because you're working for them and they're training you, and therefore you're paid. Look, any job, you're paid when you're being trained. So if they're not paying, you could go to employment standards and get at least minimum wage to be paid to you for that period of time.
So what I've done is, I don't know if this was the right start, I started by calling the Ministry of Labor, or Employment Standards.
Mm-hmm.
They said that school busing is transportation, and that's federal. So they transport...
No, it's not federal. It's federal if it's interprovincial busing. If it's buses that go between provinces or across the border, it's federal. If it's a bus company, if it's a school buses, they're provincial. So they gave you wrong information.
And then I left my questions, and they said they'd call me back in 2 to 3 days because of the overload of questions.
You should be paid for your training is the answer.
From them again. I just called them again if I were you.
There you go. Howard Levitt, sorry, we're tight on time here, guys. I'm sorry. I always hate to cut people off, but, there's so many people that want to talk to Howard, and I understand he's Canada's top employment lawyer, but sometimes the clock beats us up. Howard Levitt, employment lawyer, Levitt LLP. Howard, it's always great talking to you.
Thanks, John.
Appreciate you being here.